I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
So now the batter, Kurt Suzuki, and he swings and hits one high in the inner right field, sending Markakis back. Slowing up, shy of the track, he makes the catch. Runners will tag. Soto coming down the line to score. Zimmerman goes to third and a long fly and a sacrifice fly for Kurt Suzuki. He drives in his 39th run of the year. The Nationals are back in front by 9. It's now Washington 12. And Atlanta 3.
One of 7 Nats to drive in a run last night in a 13-run, 16-hit explosion. Kurt Suzuki joining us now. At the end of this interview, we are giving away a pair of tickets to see the Nats and the Dodgers. So make sure you're listening on G&D at that time. But right now, Kurt joins us from Atlanta. Kurt Suzuki on the hotline. And Kurt, you guys didn't get much sleep. You got into Atlanta about 4 a.m. going into last night's contest. You didn't look like it, though. You look like you got a great night in bed. What'd you make of the breakout performance to kick off the biggest series of your season?
Yeah, it was nice. You know, it's always nice to start off a series like that, especially a big series with Atlanta in the division. They're obviously leading the division. So sometimes those nights where you get in late and, you know, get no sleep, you come out and you score a lot of runs. And luckily for us, it happened last night.
Kurt, how tough is the preparation? Because you all didn't find out until late the night before that you were going to see Kyle Wright instead of Julio Teheran. If it's a guy that's an established pitcher, you've got a book on him. But a guy like Wright, you don't. How tough is that preparation for the new hurler in that situation?
It's almost better because you don't have all this information where you're overthinking things and stuff like that. You know, you just kind of go out there and trust your instincts and see the ball and hit it. Obviously, we have a little basic scouting report on what he has in the minor leagues and his brief time in the big leagues. But for the most part, you go up there and you know, you just use your instinct, like I said, and it plays out better because you don't overthink it.
How about Stras? 3 hits, a homer, and 5 batted in last night.
Yeah, he made that look pretty easy. It was a pretty cool thing to see. You know, I've never seen that in my entire career, and you know, especially homer and driving all those runs and three for three and pitch well. It was pretty cool.
There's only been 2 pitchers, in fact, during the DH era that started back in the 70s that have ever pulled off the night he had last night. So most of us have never seen it. Kurt Suzuki's on Grant and Danny. Now, he was dancing in the dugout. I love that you guys have the little dance tunnel. Looks like Gerardo Parra was brought in seasons in the middle of a lot of those things. You're rolling 19 of 25, 20 of 27, 32 and 13 now, the best team in baseball since late May. What clicked? What changed? And how did you know that you guys were going to turn the corner if you did?
You know, we've got a bunch of veteran guys on our team, you know, and we've got guys that have been to the World Series, guys that have played in the playoffs a lot. You know, I think that, you know, obviously it wasn't the start that we wanted, but at the same time, you know, we understood it was a long season. We understood how good our team was. We had a ton of injuries in the beginning of the year, and we knew once we got guys healthy, things would start rolling, and it showed, you know.
Kurt, for you and Jan being new guys to the club, and in the case of at least 4 of the starters you're working with right now are veteran guys, but how long does it take for you and Jan as new catchers coming over to a ball club to get in step with those starting pitchers within that rotation? So everything between you really becomes instinctive and you guys can get on that same page and start rolling.
Yeah, it takes some time. You know, it definitely takes some getting used to and all that stuff. Spring training is not long enough to get on the a good groove. You know, you have to go in the season and things like that. But, you know, I think for myself and Jan included, I think we've been around for a little bit now that we kind of understand patterns and sequences, and you know, we understand how important it is to get on the same page as the pitcher, and I think just being around for a little bit now and understanding the process and things like that, it might speed it up a little bit, but you know, it definitely takes some time and time to getting used to, but you know, we feel like we've done a pretty good job so far.
Kurt, two-parter here. First, I think you're better offensively now than you were when you were here the first time. You know, I think you're better now in your mid-30s than you were in your high 20s. I want to know if you agree with that. And the numbers bear it out. Your OPS is your highest three OPSs in your career were 17, 18, 19 at ages 33, 34, 35. If that's the case, why do you think that is? What has changed late in your career here?
I don't know. You know, it's a weird game. You know, I feel like, you know, I started off really strong in the beginning of my career, then kind of hit a little middle pass and got good and then kind of faded away and then, you know, came back strong the last couple of years. I think it's just baseball. The ebbs and flows of baseball. Obviously, I would have loved to sustain, you know, the productivity, but, you know, with the position that I'm in and things like that, you know, you could say that, you know, not playing on an everyday basis has a lot to do with it, especially, you know, getting older in my age, kind of keeping me fresher, keeping me stronger, and things like that, I think, that have helped. But, you know, there's some few swing things that I tweak in my swing, but nothing crazy. You know, my swing's pretty much the same as it always been. It's just, you know, I can't explain it.
So the analytics part of it, you know, you're not necessarily being like a launch angle guy. You're not one of these guys who changed with the information that we have late in your career.
No, I think when I do think about that launch angle and all that stuff, I start hitting fly balls and then start popping up and swinging and missing and all that kind of stuff. You know, I just try to hit the ball hard. You know, I feel like my swing has a natural loft in it anyway, but when I think about launch angle, it gets a little even more exaggerated, which I don't want. So the more direct I can be to the ball, the better. And you know, if it goes in the air over the fence, that's great. But I'm just really honestly just trying to hit the ball hard.
Kurt, as a veteran, you've been in a lot of clubhouses. But as we observe you all as major league players, you're the best in the profession. We almost look at you as robots from time to time because you're pros. But do we underrate a free and, you know, fun clubhouse that it seems that you all have right now, where it just seems like you guys are playing relaxed, you guys are having a lot of fun out there, and thus it is translated into consistent results for this team? Do we underrate that part of the game for you all?
We try to keep this game fun, you know. Like I said, you know, we got a veteran team. We got guys that have been through the trenches, guys that have been through the grind, you know, for a long time, and you know, we understand that you got to have fun. You know, you got to have fun in this game. The more stress and all that kind of stuff you put on yourself and, you know, as collectively as a team, you know, it turns out to be a long season. You know, the more fun you can have, you know, enjoying being around each and every one of our teammates, I think, makes the season go by better. And, you know, we're just trying to do that right now and, you know, translating onto the field, and it's been great.
Kurt Suzuki's been to the playoffs twice, in 2012 here with the Nats and 2018 last year with Atlanta. He's in Atlanta taking on the Braves with the Nationals, looking for a second win in two games tonight to start this four-game series. You can listen to the game at 7:20 here on The Fan as he joins us on 106.7 The Fan. Kurt, you mentioned the workload. I want to circle back to that for a second. Now, we get callers all the time that say, man, Kurt Suzuki's killing the ball. Every time he starts, he has a great game. They got to play him more. But you said part of maybe why you're so effective is that you're not being overtaxed. Could you play more and do what you're doing as consistently, or is this kind of like the perfect amount of play time for you at this point of your career?
I don't know. You know, I feel like, you know, the way I train and all that stuff and my body, you know, I feel like, you know, I'm able to do it. But, you know, obviously it's been working the last couple years or less. 2 to 3 years, it's been working out great. You know, you really don't want to change a good thing, but obviously if it comes to a time where, you know, they want me to play more, then whatever, you know, I leave that up to Davey. He's been doing a good job so far this year of managing, you know, myself and Jan's workload and keeping us both fresh and things like that. So, you know, I think it's going great. Obviously, you know, if they want me to catch more, great. But right now, the way it is, I think it's real productive on both ends.
Kurt, you obviously made the playoffs with Atlanta last year. You all have played Atlanta enough now, at least to get a read. Do you see much difference in this version of the Braves than the one from a year ago that obviously ascended to win a division title?
No, they're you know, they got great young arms. Obviously, they got exciting young players mixed in with a bunch of good veteran players, you know, Marquez, Freeman, McCann, Flowers, guys like that. You know, they got some good talent. Donaldson, you know, they're a scrappy team. You know, they're never going to give up. And you know, I think that, you know, they kind of resemble ourselves a little bit, where, you know, we play to the last out. We're going to keep grinding away at you. We're going to keep grinding away, and you know, that's the type of team they are.
Kurt, before we let you go, a couple of quick ones here. First on Max Scherzer. Calm my nerves a little bit if you can. Have you talked to Max? How's he feeling?
No, he'll be fine. He'll be fine. He's, you know, he's getting his arm ready. He like, you know what, like he said, you know, it's out there. He wants to be 100%, and, you know, you respect that. It's, we got a long ways to go, and obviously we would love for him to be pitching for us right now, but, you know, we got to get him right.
Second, have you ever eaten at the Varsity in Atlanta?
No, I haven't, but I heard it's a pretty cool place to be. You know, I talked to a bunch of the guys last year, like, you haven't been there? They're giving me a hard time about it, but, you know, it's definitely on the bucket list.
Are you a healthy eater, or you eat, like, the delicious, good fried foods and stuff?
I try to be healthy to an extent. You know, I try to keep this body fueled. When you get this old, older in age, with a lot of games under your belt, you try to keep your body fueled with the best food you can.
We appreciate a couple of minutes. You're having a whale of a season. Keep it up, and congrats to you guys. Stay hot in Atlanta. Won't be very difficult with the weather. Keep stringing wins together.
Okay, thanks, guys.
You bet. There's Kurt Suzuki of the Washington Nationals on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Always a tremendous interview. He has been integral. And I thought that was interesting that he said a lot of people call in and they'll say, play him more. When talking about why he's gotten better offensively later in his career, one of the first things he referenced is maybe the less innings behind the plate, fewer times crouching down, might help him out. Redskins, 20 questions, 20 days. We're talking Jordan Reed in the tight end position as we continue on The Fan. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Pete in for Danny. We're with you until 2. 40 minutes from now, Chad Dukes versus the world. Right now, caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. You're winning that pair of tickets we told you about. Nationals, Dodgers, July 27th, Nats Park, 106.7 The Fan and PenFed Credit Union are taking you out to the ballgame all season long, courtesy of PenFed Credit Union. Details at thefandc.com /contest.
I'm going to miss that next week.
You like that, don't you?
I go back to my dungeon next week, 5 a.m. to noon.
I'll have to come over there and make sure everything's okay in the dungeon.
It's okay.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
I just chill over there.
See,
keep the lights off. Everybody freaks out because I keep the lights off. I don't have the lights on when I'm in there.
I would fall asleep. If I was in a room that quiet with no lights on by myself, I would start.
It's kind of like solitary confinement, because that's what I'm in. I'm in solitary confinement. They let me out to actually see the daylight here the past 2 weeks, being you and then being Danny.
Do you nod off a little bit sometimes? Because I got to tell you, if I was in there, whether it's cold or hot, the temperature wouldn't matter, I guess, but a lot of times, you get in here at like 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
You're in there uninterrupted for 25 minutes at a time.
You do a sports cast at 6 o'clock, and then you don't speak again until like 6:37. Sure, it's easy to do for a moment or two.
A little nappy for Pete Medhurst.
I don't know about how long it is, but you find yourself after like 2 minutes going, oh, hey, you know.
That's the worst kind of nap, though. It's not even a nap, but sleep, when you kind of jar yourself back
to. The one thing I
always
do, because I have to do multiple stations, the one thing I am very good at now is I set my alarm for the next sports cast. That way, even if for some reason I can be looking at something on the computer, and if for some reason I'm listening to the Junkies instead of the other station, it always keeps me in tune to listening to the other station, so I don't miss the sports.
The other station you're doing an update for.
Yes.
Got you. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I mean, I just remember, like, back in the day at school, like, you're just doing everything you could in class to not nod off, and you're looking at the teacher. If you're in one of those 400-person big halls where, you know, you can just sleep through the whole thing and it doesn't matter, that's one thing. But there's like 18 to 20 of you. The lights are out, maybe the overhead's on or whatever. The teacher's looking around the room, and you know she's going to see you if you nod off, and you just kind of, your head's dropping and you pick it back up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Hawkins. What'd you say?
That's the worst feeling in the world. You got to go take a lap. You got to go throw water on your face. You're tired. You could just fall asleep. But you know, as soon
Grant,
as your head drops,
do you
drops,
know about ancient
you.
Mesopotamia?
You're embarrassed.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Hawkins. What were you talking about?
And like snapping back to life.
Yeah.
That's not a good feeling. 20 Redskins questions in 20 days. Jordan Reed, was 2018 a down year by Jordan Reed standards? A fluke, Or was that the beginning of the rest of his career? That's the question. Jordan Reed is 29 years old. He will turn 30 a year from now. He just turned 29. So this is his age 29 season in its entirety. He'll turn 30 just before the start of training camp next year. He only started, I should say played in, 13 games last season. They determine starts based on if you're on the field on the first snap or not. It's kind of wacky based on formation. But 13 times last year he posted for the Redskins. 7 more than the year before.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Second highest total of his career. So you go, oh, good, he broke back through. No, he did not. 54 catches. He's caught as many as 87 passes before in the similar number of games. 558 yards. We saw him go for 400 more yards in 2015 in the same number of games. The same number of yards per catch. Just more involved and more dynamic. You know, Danny and I talk about some of the great plays he's made over the years, and one of them was his touchdown in the overtime tie against the Cincinnati Bengals. And I just don't think he's got those clubs in the bag anymore, where he can make a catch, he can make four or five guys miss, he can elude defenders, he can hurdle a dude trying to tackle him at the second level, he can break a tackle. It seems like some of the burst and the explosiveness and the juice and what made him special as a route runner, light on his feet and nimble at 245 pounds, it just seemed like some of it was gone last year.
I think there was a lack of trust of his body and some of the things that had become so athletic and instinctive for him, Grant, just weren't there. I mean, period. I mean, you talked about the amount of catches. In 15, he had 114 targets. Last year was just 84. So that, you know, in the seasons where he's been healthy enough to play a legitimate amount of games, you know, that total now starting to downgrade. Now, was that because you switched quarterbacks early in the season? It was Alex Smith. Then you had Injury City after that. You know, I'd be willing to put a little bit of that in terms of the analytical stuff, but the effect of the game, the effect that he's had on the game, is clearly not the same that he had in previous years. And I think that's a challenge for Jay Gruden and Kevin O'Connell. How do you get, if indeed he has the ability physically to still do it, how do you get him back to the point where he was affecting the games in such grand style as he was before, as you just described? Because I think that's one of the key question marks about this training camp and upcoming season is, can he even remotely get back to this great player that at one point we were talking was right there, ready to challenge a guy like Rob Gronkowski at the time as one of the top tight ends in the game?
Yeah, I had him and Gronk as the top couple. You know, Travis Kelce probably surpassing him. And now, obviously, if you were ranking these guys, even if Jordan Reed was on top of his game, I think you look up the road in Philadelphia to Zach Ertz, and he's surpassed even Jordan Reed at his highest level. But now, Reed might not be in the top 10 coming off of last year. If he is, he's in the back end of it, just based on 2015 and what you know he's capable of at his best when it's 72 and sunny. You know, you're right. Maybe some of it was, you know, he wasn't completely sure of his body. But he caught 2 touchdowns last year, 2 touchdowns the year before that. He has become, at least statistically, and last year on the field, visually, anecdotally, a shell of what he once was.
And the catch percentage dramatically down. Not just,
well, here's why. Because you're right. I think he's not open as much anymore. And this goes back to the burst, the footwork, the jolt, the explosive quick twitch stuff, right? You mentioned targets. I love that you did. I think he's getting the ball thrown to him less and the catch percentage is down because he's got defenders on him more often. In the past, he was beating you off the dribble like a point guard and he was leaving you in his dust, jockstrapping you at the line of scrimmage, and he was 4 yards past you making a catch for 11 yards.
Counterpoint on that, though, is it because the lack of people on the outside that teams respect that they could gang up and jam things up inside on Jordan Reed so he couldn't get open by defending him differently because you did not have to acknowledge the guys on the outside
as
much?
I'm sure it's a factor. I mean, in 2015, you had the likes of Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson helping you in
Big
the middle
difference.
Of the field. But 2015 Jordan Reed, way more capable of, without any help, being a game breaker. 2015 Jordan Reed got $50 million for a reason.
But he started to emerge. Teams then had to defend him differently.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's occurred here as well. Now it's upon these guys on the outside to help their guy out inside here to become more of a factor.
Antonio Gates. Didn't matter who was outside. He was special. Jordan Reed was on that track at one point in time. And I'm just not sure if he's there anymore. But want to take your guys' thoughts on this. 800-636-1067 if you've got a take. Want to hear your comments. 20 Redskins questions in 20 days. Jordan Reed at the tight end position for the Redskins. The highest paid tight end group in the league is led by a guy coming off of a disappointing season. Is that the beginning of the rest of his career looking like that, or was it kind of a fluke down campaign? Grant and Pete in for Danny on The Fan. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Looking at a couple of the big stories in sports today, you know it's kind of a downtime, big picture, in the national sports landscape. The number one story in sports is Tiger Woods talking about his bad round of golf. That's the number one story on ESPN.com. Then you've got a story on the Ohio State Buckeyes as they get ready for football, which is still, almost 2 months
away? That's because we're in college football media days right now, so
sure. All
of the media is assembled. They were at SEC this week, Big Ten this week.
But it would
week.
Be buried if there was an NFL story, and there aren't any. It would be buried if there was a lot going on in a major sport, and there's just not a lot. Speaking of media days yesterday, see Jim Harbaugh calling out Urban Meyer?
Mm-hmm.
Jim Harbaugh should worry about Michigan, don't you think?
He should. He should, but his job right now, part of that is to deflect away from his chief rival now that they've changed coaches. I can understand where he was going with that, but you're right. I mean, 99% of the time, you should be focused on your club and your organization like that. And, you know, unfortunately, we get some of the dumbest questions asked at some of these things. Like Will Muschamp, the South Carolina coach this week, was asked by some guy who could barely speak, is South Carolina, are y'all like a little brother to Clemson now since Clemson's won two of the last three championships? And I'm cleaning it up, basically, mm-hmm. what the guy said for him. I mean, we let anybody into these big media powwows like Media Days, so you get some of the just silliest things. So when they do answer something like that, sometimes the answer ends up as a big story when they weren't necessarily saying that themselves, but they were asked a question and then responded to it like that. So, and Jim's never shied away from talking. Jim will say anything.
He makes himself hard to like in just his general tone and demeanor. And
I can see that.
The way he speaks to and with people. He's not John Harbaugh.
He's awkward.
John got the likability gene in that family.
Yeah, John's a good dude.
Ex-Giants lineman Mitch Petras has died at 32 years old. This is a sad story of a heat stroke. He played his college ball at Arkansas. He actually played on a team blocking for Darren McFadden and Felix Jones. Was an all-SEC offensive lineman, was a fifth-round pick in 2010, had a three-year career, played in the Super Bowl with the Giants, and also briefly with the Patriots and the Titans, 27 games. But 32, it reminds me of just a couple weeks ago with Tyler Skaggs at 27.
Yeah.
I mean, it's frightening when you hear of these deaths of young people, but it's just sad. You have so much life ahead of you. At least we know why he died, a heat stroke. We still, to my knowledge, haven't heard anything on Tyler Skaggs.
No, not at all.
Which is baffling. And
yes.
That's, to me, that's petrifying.
Also scary. By the way, we touched on this in the update two updates ago. What do you make of this? A Louisiana judge allowing a lawsuit against the NFL over the infamous no call in last year's NFC Championship game to continue. The lawsuit brought by a team of four lawyers could mean that Roger Goodell and game officials can be questioned in depositions regarding the Nickell Robey Coleman hit on Saints receiver Tommy Lee Lewis that went unflagged.
I mean, what are they going to try to allege? That they were working in cahoots to get the Saints?
Did y'all not want the Saints? Because it's probably a guy from that. Did y'all not want the Saints get to the Super Bowl?
You going to prove that they were trying to get the Rams and Sean
McVay? Y'all want the L.A. market in there? Is that what it was?
I don't know how they...
How is this allowed to continue? I mean, this is a farce.
It is a farce. I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that.
I mean, Roger Goodell's got to be sitting there going, man, of all the stuff that I've had to defend myself over, now you're going to ask me to sit for this?
Goodell screwed up a lot of things and been held over the barrel correctly a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. And I think he has incorrectly many times over jobbed players and teams. And in the end, he's gotten his comeuppance for it.
What do you make of the league?
This not is not one of those times.
No, not at all.
This is not worth wasting his time and the league's time over.
What do you make of the league not suspending Tyreek Hill? Because anything that you could habitually find a guy, you know, for the personal conduct policy, they have found a way, but he's not going to be suspended by the league here. This now would be in the Chiefs' plate, if anything.
I'm surprised. They obviously had way less even than they had with Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, we've learned and we've seen that you don't need the smoking gun. You don't need the receipt. I mean, they're their own court. So even if you're not found guilty, even if charges are dropped, Reuben Foster,
precise,
you can still be suspended by the National Football League. Based on what happened with Reuben Foster earlier this offseason, and before his injury, we found out he wasn't going to be suspended, it does not shock me at all. I believe there's been a little bit of a correction. Maybe that's not the right word, because I don't know if it means that they are doing the correct thing or not. But there has been a little bit of a change from the NFL, I think, to want more hard and fast evidence after the way the Ezekiel Elliott story played out a couple of seasons ago.
Now, that's the way it would be in a court of law, so shouldn't it be that way in this standpoint? At least that's what the players and that's what the Players Association would lead you to believe.
Yeah, that's what the Players Association wants. And like we talked to Georgia Tile, I have him on all the time. D. Smith goes on with the Junkies, and he's been on our show as well. I disagree with the idea that players shouldn't be allowed to get in trouble unless they get in trouble legally. Like, I could do something and charges could be dropped and I could be fired from this place. Most workplaces have their own thresholds. The fact is, charges being dropped doesn't mean you didn't commit a crime. You know, charges being dropped doesn't mean you didn't do anything wrong. Charges can be dropped because the person that you hit likes you or loves you. Charges can be dropped because someone doesn't want to cooperate, because you paid them under the table, because of some technicality, because the cop didn't write something down correctly, because the bookkeeping wasn't
illegal
done right.
Illegal search or
exactly.
Anything like that, sure.
So that doesn't mean you didn't do what the league wants its players to learn from and what the league is saying can't be done if you're going to play games. So, no, I don't think they should have to follow and wait after every hearing, every investigation, every pending court case. But there's got to be a high threshold, because I don't want to get into a situation where Roger Goodell willy-nilly just decides, yeah, this person saying you did this, that feels shady to me, so you're not going to play for a month. I want the several-week to several-month investigation with several documents and dozens of sheets of paper to read through from ideally an independent arbiter, which doesn't always happen.
But, and at least here they were transparent in saying that, you know, hey, we could not get access to, you know, certain information, thus therefore we don't have enough to suspend the player here. So they tried, they did as good as they could, but in this situation, when you don't come up with any evidence, the NFL, just like they did with Reuben Foster, not going to suspend the player.
800-636-1067 is the number you want to hop in our final segment. We're going to get to your answers on the Jordan Reed question, 20 Redskins questions in 20 days. Was this past season in 2018 a down year for him, a fluke regression, or is it the beginning of the rest of the run for Reed? Maybe he has lost some of what made him an elite player at tight end after all the injuries. We'll get to those thoughts. We will set up the weekend ahead. And I've got some odds for the MVP race in the National Football League from Bet Online. Next on Grant and Danny with Pete in for Mr. Rouye. Hey, Pete, before we wrap up the show with a couple other things I wanted to hit here on the way out, and we preview the Nats and the Braves, game two of a four-game series. Tell the story you just told me, because I thought that was awesome.
Airplane?
I didn't realize this. So Pete used to do traffic, which I knew. I thought occasionally you went up in like a chopper, like News 4 nope. Chopper.
All Cessna for me, buddy.
So you were in an actual airplane.
Give me something I can float in case the engine goes down. Engine goes down, a helicopter, you're pretty much going straight down. Airplane, we at least got a chance to float to some open space.
Did you ever have any scares that you guys were going to crash?
Two of them. One, we got stuck behind a C-141 over near Andrews. Because the air traffic controller didn't give us a heads up. All of a sudden, they turned over top of us. We got caught in their backwash. We probably went down to about 800 feet before the pilot was out of the backwash, and we were able to straighten away and go on our way.
That's petrifying.
And the other one was when I knew we were in the wrong area, because this was after 9/11, and I knew, obviously, where the no-fly zones were. And we were over top of Green Stadium at Howard University, because I could see Howard on the football field down there.
So basically, you guys flew around for traffic, and where was your turret? Like, where are you
supposed to be? Everywhere. If there was an accident, we went there.
Okay.
So we could go all the way around the Beltway, up 270, out 66. We go to Ocean City for beach traffic
on
the weekends. Isn't
that a huge waste of money?
No, not at all. Not back then. It was the only way.
What year is this?
Let's see. I got the best traffic reporter award in 2001. So that was like probably from 99 to 209, somewhere in that area.
Okay. And you were in a Cessna.
I was in a Cessna.
And would you call into a TV station or a radio station?
Radio station. I used to do it for WMAL.
And you would just say what you're seeing from up in the air.
That's right. Jamie Whitten on the ground would throw it up to me over the Beltway, 270. Here's Pete Medhurst. That's right, Jamie, right now from 124 all the way down to the Beltway, stop and go volume, but all lanes are open. Back to you. I wouldn't say back to you, but that's what I would say.
Okay. So that's worth the Cessna and the gas and all that?
At the time, yes, because it was the only way to get the information. We didn't have all of this technology and Waze and GPS. Right, Google Maps. We didn't have any of that stuff.
Right. But then what you told me was, so you fly over Howard.
So we're over top of Green. Pete. We're over top of Green Stadium. It's like 6:15 in the
give
morning.
Give me it again, real quick.
We're over top of Green Stadium right here at Howard University. And at this point, I realize we're not where we're supposed to be.
Because you're not allowed to fly over D.C. at all.
This was after 9/11, so this was in the no-fly zone.
Did you say anything to the pilot?
Yeah, I said, I don't think we're supposed to be here because this is Howard University. We should probably go this way. And we did. So, and I knew something was probably going to come of it. Sure enough, I probably walked into my house because it was a split shift deal. So I walked in my house that morning, and within 5 minutes, I had the Secret Service on the phone. And they're like, yeah, you know, I think it was just a kind of an honest accident, but, you know, I've got to ask you some certain questions. And, you know, hey, did your pilot at any time say they were going to threaten the president or anything or fly to the White House or, you know, try to crash? Because look,
there was a guy trying
to crash a Cessna into the White House. He crashed in the White House lawn. So people have tried to do that.
By the way, this sound might sound a little more familiar. At first, Tommy gave you a helicopter.
This is beautiful.
This is Cessna.
This is music to my ears, man.
Yeah, this is Pete up in the air.
My man Stan Fetter gave me some great airplanes. I had some great pilots to fly around in.
Where'd you take off from?
Hyde Field over in Clinton, right off of Woodyard Road, Piscataway Road, right in that area.
This might be a hot take. I would never fly in one of those little planes.
I would not have done it in a helicopter.
In a million years. I won't fly in one of those, like, yeah, hop in my plane. I don't know what the term for them is. Like, I just Googled Cessna. It's exactly what I'm talking about. Like, the little two wings guy who flies on Saturdays for 3 hours. You got his pilot's license. Is over top of Fredericksburg.
Flying out to Ocean City and beating the traffic instead of driving in it.
No chance could you get me to do that.
Dude, it was great. I mean, it really was. I had a great time doing it. And, you know, knock on wood. You know, cheated some potential, you know, bad things a couple times along the way. But otherwise, I mean, it was a great time.
I'm just so happy to be.
Great way to make a living for 10 years. I know that.
Bet Online's got your MVP odds. Pat Mahomes number one in the league at 6-1, 9-1. Rodgers and Luck. Carson Wentz tied with them at 9-1. Kind of interesting to me.
It's a bit ambitious.
Here's the one that surprised me: Baker Mayfield at 5th. Best odds at 12-1 to win MVP. They think there's a worse chance that Drew Brees or Tom Brady is the MVP of the NFL than Baker Mayfield.
This is Las Vegas saying hype sells. We're gonna suck people in that want to throw the cash down on Baker Mayfield here. And if you're a shrewd bettor, you put a couple of shekels on Drew Brees or a Tom Brady in a situation
throw
$100 like
bucks
that.
Down on Brady, you get $1,400.
Plus $1,400, man. That's a great odd to take at this point, though. I would imagine to see what Patrick Mahomes' numbers may be. It may go down a little bit now that we have clarification on Tyreek Hill being able to play. He probably goes down somewhere in the area of plus 450 now from plus 600 because his chances just increased that much more, and there's no question. There's no question about whether Hill's going to participate or not.
Favorite to win the MVP, only getting more likely to do so. No doubt about that with the news that we got first thing this morning here on Grant and Danny. Tonight, the Nats and the Braves, 6:50 pregame, 7:20 first pitch for Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler right here on your flagship home for Nats baseball, 106.7 The Fan. If the Nats win tonight, they're within 4.5 after a second straight win over the Braves. And in fact, the winning streak over the Braves extends beyond that to their two-game sweep over Atlanta a little over a month ago, at least on the road. They'll have taken, if they can get all three of the series over Atlanta this season. But right now, it's a 5.5 game deficit. You've got Patrick Corbin on the hill tonight, who's been throwing very well. Aníbal Sanchez tomorrow, he's been outstanding. And to be determined on Sunday with the hope that Max Scherzer could close the series down in primetime.
33 games now and three games at SunTrust Field this year for the Nationals. For whatever reason, that background and that ballpark has been great to them. They have hit fantastically in it so far, hoping that they can continue that run tonight. Because, look, you've got a chance. You're playing 720 baseball right now, Grant. You got a chance to put your foot on the throat of the Braves a little bit, who are having a little bit of a problem with their rotation with no Max Fried. They don't know how long he's going to be out due to the blister on his pitching hand. So you've got to take advantage of this little pothole for the Braves and bury them a little bit here. Put that foot right on the throat and see if you can make up even more ground here as this weekend goes along.
If you missed any part of our show today, including our interview with Kurt Suzuki of the Nationals, you can go to the podcast page at thefandc.com or grantanddanny.com. Find that interview. You should also listen to our interview with Steve Buck Ants from this week, which was tremendous. All of our shows, all of our segments from the entire week are available there. Danny will be back on Monday. We'll be at training camp in Richmond starting on Thursday. Big thank you to Alex for hanging out, as well as Tommy for his work on the production. For Pete, I'm Grant saying so long. Pete, I enjoyed my time with you this week.
I'll be back 8 to 9 tomorrow morning and 12 to 2 on Sunday. Be there.
Very good. You're listening to The Fan, Chad Dukes versus the world up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.